Is this thing on? I think it is. Well, let's get to it. Hey, everybody. My name is Derek, and I am the owner, creator, and head silicone slinger here at Amavidi, where we make silicone toys for adults. So tonight we've got a little bit different episode. We're going to switch sides. We're going to be talking to a collector this time. Somebody who's on the other side of the screen. You know, I've been doing this for some number of years now, and you know, it's always interesting to see what it's like from the other side. So I wanted to do that this evening. I'll be bringing Dong Sommelier on in just a moment, but did you see the screen that had the Patreon on it? We've got one of those. I'm not going to tell you what you should do, but it would be pretty awesome if you did support us. George will throw the link in the chat, but it's patreon.com/Amavidi, and you can do what you will with that. And I will remind everybody, all these episodes go up on YouTube, and you can go back and catch all of our previous ones. Like last week, we had Shop Dad on, and we had a really interesting discussion. We kind of geeked out a little bit, and I mean, there's so much knowledge in that brain that I want to get out into the world. And you should totally check out their wiki. And I think you can find that at OnlyGoblins. I'm skipping over my words. OnlyGoblins.com. And that will be the wiki fret that Shop Dad has put out. All right. With that, I am going to bring Dong Sommelier on. Let's see if we can get this to work right. Hey, Grizzly, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's been kind of a lazy day around here, but I've been working on things in the background that nobody will ever see, but maybe one day I'll put it out there so that folks can ogle at it. So, all right. Now, you are a collector, is that right?
Correct.
Excellent. And now, and just to remind everybody, we're talking about collecting adult toys?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And so tell me, how did you get started collecting? Actually, let's back up. Let's back up a couple of steps because nobody knows who you are. And give me just like a little rundown of kind of who you are, a little bit of your background, as much as you want to share, and kind of how you stumbled into collecting toys.
I mean, I've always been a collector since I was a kid, with just different things, whether it was card games or board games or shot glasses, that type of stuff. And I know shot glasses is a big one for a lot of people sometimes. And just over the years, I just was into collecting and just different types of things I was always involved with, that just things that just interested me. And at the time, a few years ago, I got into the community and into all the toys, actually through my ex, and we had sort of just explored that sort of space, and I had one type of mentality behind it. I wasn't 100% supportive about it. It was just a whole new community and a whole new thing that I just never had any knowledge on, and just over time I sort of absorbed as much knowledge as I could, and you know, sort of lurked and just kept to myself and just trying to find out whatever I could and sort of open my mind on different things. And then lo and behold, just over the course of, you know, about a year, I went from a small collection of like one or two here or there to I had over 100, and it just exploded. And within, you know, the last few years that I've been collecting since early 2020, I have well over 200 toys currently.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, I've got some pictures, and we'll bring those up in a minute. But you said you started off, you kind of grew up as a collector. And one of the things that you mentioned in your bio was that you're a board game collector as well.
Yes.
Interesting. And did I say the number right? Was it like 800?
Yeah. That's base games. So there's some games that have multiple expansions, or there's a whole set of them that are in the same world, and I count that all as one. So
oh, wow.
I have well over 800 games. I have some in storage units or in storage unit. I have some long, along my walls and just big shelving units. So yeah, it's a pretty decent sized collection.
Wow. One of my businesses is in the, board game space. And so, I'm always curious how people get into that. And how do you not become a completionist?
Funnily enough, I was one for quite a while. And then I realized that at the end of the day, I mean, as long as you have disposable income, you're going to do what you want to do with your own money. But at the end of the day, I came to the realization that as much as a completionist, as I want to be a completionist with certain things, because you just got to have every little aspect of something, whether it's toys or, you know, a board game, it didn't give me as much joy, I guess you could say, having every little, it did at first. And then over time, I was like, I'm spending too much time, too much money trying to track this down. And how often am I going to get to use it? And it just came down to a sense of, what do I really want? And I sort of, you know, collectors in general have, like most people, have a certain mindset with certain things, in particular with their collections. And my mindset was evolving over the time. And I went from being a completionist to, okay, so if I don't have everything, it's not the end of the world. If I come across it later on, then that's fine. I'll pick it up, but I'm not going to worry about it too much.
Yeah, because I was wondering, like, you know, how do you go from that completionist mindset, which you can do in the board game space, but when it comes to collecting toys, that's especially as unique as the toys can be. I mean, how do you kind of draw the lines for yourself when you're trying to kind of define your collection?
That's an interesting question. For me, because I can't speak for anyone else, but for myself, it came down to a few different factors of I was a completionist even for the toys. I had to get, you know, from, for instance, Strange Bedfellow, I had to get every model they had. They're one of my favorite companies. And same thing for Pleasure Forge and a bunch of others. I wanted to have it all. Whether or not, in some respects, if I could actually utilize it or if it was just fit my thematic collection. And again, it came down to either finances, just, you know, that's what it is for a lot of people sometimes. And other times, like, you know, I already have five of this model and different variations of colors. I don't think I need a sixth one. So, you know, it just, certain things just have to click for you. If they don't, it can get a little rampant, get out of control. And then you turn back one day and you're like, I have too many. And I think a lot of collectors get to that point, and that's when they start to purge and cull their collections. And I think that's what we've been seeing a lot over time, that there's sort of phases and waves that collectors and other people go through, much like donksmiths and makers. They sort of go through phases of what they want to make and what they want to do, whether it's pour style or model style, I think. So, yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned, like, you know, you had five of one model.
Yeah.
This is a new world for me because, you know, I make them, and so I have a different relationship with them. And so, you know, how or why would you want five of the same model?
Well, there's different aspects. So one of them is, if they're different sizes, you know, you got to have different sizes in some instances, especially if you're trying to sort of, I guess, progress as best word I could think of in that sense. Others would be sort of, I guess, the poor aesthetic, because sometimes you get a certain pour from a maker and you're like, oh, I absolutely love it. And then you look at it, you're like, oh, I wish it had UV. And then, you know, 6 months down the road, they do a similar pour and it has UV. And you're like, oh, that's it. That's the one I want. And you get it. And then sometimes you're like, now which one do I keep? And a lot of people will think, oh, it's a no-brainer. Get rid of the older one and keep the newer one, and they're similar. But then, you know, sometimes you get that collector brain going, and it's like, yeah, but this was the first one I had of this. And then, again, you turn back, and you're like, I have five of the same model.
So you kind of develop almost an emotional relationship?
Of sorts. I mean, it doesn't get too much like an actual relationship, obviously, but
right.
There is this connection. And I think people have that with inanimate objects a lot, just in general, whether it's with money or their actual collections or gaming or just, you know, video gaming or just anything in that sense. You sort of grow an attachment to certain things, and you have to know where to put the line sometimes, just so you have a sense of self, I guess.
Right. So how did you move that line for yourself when you went from, you know, you had a few toys that started off your collection to now being at 200 pieces?
So over time, I had a lot of it came down to knowledge. I think like most things, I came into the community and the only main company I knew is, you know, BD is the big one. And most people have heard about that one. It's pretty much the biggest company.
And I don't mind mentioning them. You're talking about Bad Dragon, right?
Correct.
Okay.
And then I didn't know anything about the indie community whatsoever. And I had gone on to Reddit and spoke with some people, and I was just finding, I'm like, oh, there's other companies and this looks interesting. It's really great pour. And I connected with someone, and funnily enough, that person was Ishtar. I had spoken with them, and they're like, well, there's a whole community out there for this type of thing, you know, fantasy collecting. And I'm like, I did not know. And over time, I joined a few servers, got into Twitter, and everything was growing. I was like, okay. And with that growth of knowledge, I learned more about different toys, and, you know, every maker's got their own spin on things. And, you know, it's like, okay, you know, you pick up, let's say, an equine model or something like that, just, you know, right. Something that is of that similar shape, but there's like 30 different styles of it, you know, as similar as they are, there's 30 different versions. And you're like, okay, some, you know, obviously will work in some instances, or, you know, just they have a certain look that you want, and others not so much. And, you know, it just, with the more you know, the more you're going to research and find out what your wants and dislikes are, and you just, it just grows.
Okay. So it's kind of a slippery slope almost. Mm-hmm. By the way, Ishtar, you mentioned Ishtar. They're going to be on next weekend. So
yep.
I've got a couple of collectors back to back, and be interesting to see how the two stories, how similar they are. I guess Bad Dragon is kind of the gateway for a lot of folks.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't mind mentioning them. There, some people have a love-hate relationship with Bad Dragon. I really don't care. They're not what I do. I don't see them as competition. I don't really see them as indie anymore. I mean, they've gotten pretty big.
Yeah.
But they're kind of the OGs of the market.
Yeah, they definitely are. When I saw them as sort of mainstream, and I know there are other bigger companies out there that other people would consider more mainstream, but for me, who didn't have any knowledge of this, to me, they seemed the most mainstream until, again, you gain knowledge and you're like, okay, so they're a big fish in a very large pond, but, you know, you then, little by little, you're gaining, oh, there's also indie, you know, makers, and they do this, and sometimes you're like, oh, I actually like their work more. And, you know, it is what it is when you're collecting and, you know, going through the community.
Mm-hmm. One thing that I think Bad Dragon does very well is, and you kind of touched on this very slightly, is that they do a lot of different sizes. And
yep.
No matter kind of which model you're interested in because of whatever aesthetic, they have a range of sizes. Some of them are intimidating. Some of them are more approachable. But I think that's something that they do very well.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think every maker has their sort of their niche, and they've sort of have really expanded upon that and offered a wide range of sizes and pour styles that, you know, when they do the customs and, you know, as for their models, same thing. They have a large selection. Whether or not they retire certain ones, it's a very large selection. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, you mentioned Strange Bedfellows, and you mentioned mm-hmm. Paladin Pleasures, and Are there any others that you really like?
So besides Strange Bedfellows, Paladin Pleasure Sculptures, Pleasure Forge, Chimera Forge, I like a lot. There's a Hodgepodge HPE. Sorry, a lot of times when, but at least for amongst collectors, it's the sort of the acronyms that we use a lot to save ourselves time. I don't know. There's a Xeno craft.
Xenocat.
Their work. Yeah, Xenocat. And I don't know. There's a Built Up Beasts was another one. I have some of their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And a few others. I'm sort of all over the place, but there's definitely a few that are my favorites, and I have quite a large number of toys from them in particular.
Yeah, actually, while we're talking, I might be throwing stuff up on the screen so people can see. Like, here's one. Mm-hmm. And now that's a bad dragon, isn't it?
Correct.
Okay. And which model?
That's Orochi. So that's a medium. That's a medium Orochi that they had gotten during one of their drops a couple of years ago.
All right. And when you say medium, tell me what that means.
So they're medium size, and then medium firmness, which is a 05 or 050, I believe. Since you know, that would be they have it in four different textures. Typically, their standard is three, but they sometimes will do a mishap at like a super soft. So they have soft, medium, hard. But most of my collection is in the medium range for firmness. The sizes vary across the board.
Right. Okay. And I don't want to jump all over the place, but you know, there's so many different things that we can touch on. I don't know how to phrase this, and I hope that people will forgive me, but do you think that you represent the standard collector?
I personally don't think so. I mean, I know some people have said, at least about myself, and I don't know if that was, I guess, too much praise in some instances, because I mean, anyone in any position doesn't want to get too much of a big head about themselves. But some people in the community have said, "Oh, I follow you for you know a couple of years now, and you know you're part of the community like in a core fashion." And as great as that is, I'm not 100% sure that's the best assessment. So I think for collectors, a lot of times they're collecting, but then they're using. And a lot of times, you know, I'll buy toys now and then where I like their aesthetic, but I would never use them. I like their style. I like, you know, just the shape of it. I have an artistic background, so especially with sculpture type work. So a lot of times I can definitely appreciate the design behind the actual piece itself. And I do consider them like luxury art pieces. Whether or not they are utilized is a whole nother matter. But they are art to me in many regards. So I do appreciate and quite admire the amount of effort and work that goes into it from the creator side.
Hmm.
And I'm very thankful for their actual creations in many regards.
Yeah, actually, it's interesting. I, being on the maker side, once something gets past a certain point in the process, it becomes less about what it is and more about the artistic nature of it. Mm-hmm. You know, once we figure out the shape and the size and things like that, then it evolves into something that is more of an art object. I think you kind of mentioned that. So I'm glad to see that other folks on the other side of the screen see it that way as well.
Definitely. I think a lot of people in the community really support the shops and the makers and appreciate all the hard work. And I know sometimes that shops will do sort of like an announcement about different things that are going on in their lives, and that and you see the just outward love from collectors and other shops and just everyone from the community sort of just saying, you know, we got your back, we support you. And a lot of that comes down to the fact of, you know, yes, you're selling a product, you're doing what you have to, you know, financially and do what you and for what you love. And then on the other side of the coin is being a collector and you're buying these products. But at the end of the day, there is a connection that is being drawn between the both halves of the love for the thing. And in this case, it is the, you know, toy.
Gotcha. All right. You mentioned the community. And, you know, my experience with the community has been incredibly supportive. Do you find it to be the same way?
I do in many cases. Again, like any community, and I've been part of multiple communities throughout my years, whether it's board gaming or video games or, you know, sake or just even toys itself. Communities go through phases just like anything else. And it's sort of like a neighborhood. And there's some people that are just well known within the community, and then you got sort of the outskirts of people that are just new and coming in. And there's different, you know, as you have a hodgepodge of different people, there's different ideologies and mentalities, but overall it's a very welcoming, loving nature and most of the time. And I think when I got into the community, I was sort of afraid at first to sort of come in, because coming in, I didn't know anything. And I didn't, you know, in some communities you can sort of get swamped by either the know-how of other people or just, you know, gatekeeping and, you know, some people, you know, putting stigmas on certain people and just keeping you out. And that wasn't the case when I came into the community and the community as a whole. And that's one of the few things that I really love about this community in general, because for every one person that might, you know, have not the most positive of spin on life, there's 100 more that are just saying, I absolutely love you. You know, I support everything you are, everything you do, and I have you. And, you know, there have definitely been those in the community that I have had to lean on and really had my ear. I've had their ear, and it's been a blessing in many cases. So there have definitely been a lot of love in the community, and I thank every single person in it.
That's awesome. I'm going to pick up on one thing you said there. Sake.
yeah.
One of the things you mentioned in your bio as well is certified sake sommelier.
Yes. So the short of it is, because I have a very long story behind it, but the short of it is, way back when I was a young teen, I was even younger. I was into martial arts, and I had gotten into martial arts again. I picked it up after some years when I was about 13, 14 years old. So back in 2001, 2002, and my family, had basically said, you know, you should go back into doing that. And so I did. And my sensei was very much a proponent of traditional type of ideologies. And part of his, regiment was whenever I went for a new belt, for a test and I passed, it was to have a little shot glass or nochoko of sake. And, you know, you do what you do when you're 13. Sometimes, you know, get your parents' permission, like try a little beer, try a little this, you know, not a big deal. It's not like you're gonna get drunk off of it. And you know, my family's great. And so I just had a little sip here and there. And then, you know, being how I am, you know, I'm a tall, big guy, and I'm like, okay. And by the time I was 18, I wasn't drinking, but I can go into, you know, typical Japanese restaurant and they wouldn't card me. They would just be like, all right, what would you like? Would you like some sake? And I'm like, I'm looking at my folks and I'm like, yes. And that was it. It's like, it's okay. And I didn't get really into it until I was older. And but I had some experiences before then. And back in 2019, I had sort of gone, all right, I really want to see this new space of being a sake sommelier. And it wasn't anything I was going to necessarily really dive deep into. At the time, I didn't think so. I just sort of, I have, you know, I consider myself a connoisseur. I had at that point tried over 50 different types of sake, you know, before I was like 21, 22 or something like that. And I just had, you know, a fascination with the making behind it, because it's a totally different thing. It's a whole nother beast than, let's say, wine making or spirits or anything like that. And so I just really just got it, you know, cracked the books and really got into it. And lo and behold, I go into, you know, testing, and I'm taking these classes that are for certifications, and I'm looking around and everyone is somewhere or somehow in the field of beverages, whether they're a general manager for a restaurant that's well known, or they work on a yacht in the yachts industry, which you have, you know, if you're a stewardess, and they're like, oh no, I have all these certifications, I have this and that, and they're like, all right, so what do? Are you in the beverage world? Are you, you know, do you do that? And I said, no, I just drink it and I know a lot about it. and that was literally it. And they're looking at me like I'm, you know, I grew a second head, and I'm like, no, and they're like, okay, and they didn't think much of it. And then when I take the tests and I'm acing it and I'm getting, you know, hundred, they're like, wow, okay. So I thought I knew stuff, you know, and I thought I liked it, but you really like it and you know your stuff. And I'm like, you know, when you're passionate about something, a lot of times, you know, that knowledge follows it. So yeah, I ever since then, I now have multiple certifications. I'm still taking more. One of them I have to go to Japan for. So I'm just waiting so I can get prepped for that, because that's about a month long type of situation.
Oh, wow.
So yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. I saw that in your bio and I was just, it made sense when I looked at your screen name on Twitter, and I was like, oh, so that's the connection there. But it's interesting to hear the story behind that. Now, as you were talking, I was also kind of throwing some images up on the screen. And one thing that's kind of apparent is that there's a theme going on. There's a lot of blue in here.
Yep. Blue is my favorite color. Not too much of a stretch there, but I've always loved blue. It's not like I've gone absolutely nuts, but you know, if I had a car, I would prefer to get it blue than, let's say, black or white. If you know, if I was getting a computer, I would skin it with blue. You know, just stuff like that. And for me, it's a very common color, but also it's what I like. So for my collection, I always had in the back of my mind, if I'm going to have to own it, if I'm going to have to, whether or not it gets used, if I'm going to have to own it and look at it and appreciate it, I would like to appreciate it for something in which I personally would like. And for me, it being in, you know, having blue doesn't have to be all blue, but it having blue is more of a preference of what I would prefer of the type of aesthetic. If I had to do so, I'm not against other colors. It's just that it wouldn't be something specific that I would, you know, appreciate as much as I could, or I would, for that matter, if it was being something else versus just it being blue. So I've tried to go for different styles, different pour styles. I do have a couple of toys that are not blue, and those were actually distinctly purchased for specific reasons. So I have an all pink one that's like three or four different types of pink. And that one I bought, even though it was during Valentine's Day, I did it because I'm a big proponent of supporting breast cancer. So I did it for that, because I sort of, you know, that's something that I support. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to do this. So I did that and a few other things. And then I had spoken with a friend, and, you know, I found out that a mutual friend of ours was going through a rough time dealing with prostate cancer. So I was like, okay, that's something I have to, it really hit me home. So I was like, all right, I'm going to support that further. And so, you know, I was like, all right, I'm already doing stuff with blue, so I'm just going to keep on trucking, keep doing that. And it just kept growing from one thing to the next. Like, oh, you can expand. And I'm like, you know what, if I get something that's outside of blue, it feels like I'm being I'm being a traitor to myself, almost like I'm being disingenuous to my overall aesthetic. So it sort of became like a snowball down a hill. Like, I, for every time I got a new one, a new toy, I had to get another one. And it just had to be in the same coloration in blue overall.
Gotcha. So I've got one of your collection picks up on the screen, and, you know, 99% of them are blue. There's one over here that's on the right. I'm kind of hovering over it here. Is that the pink one that you were just talking about?
That's actually a pink one that actually has blue in its glow.
Okay.
So, no, the pink one is actually not there. It's Echo from BD that I got.
Okay.
And that was that one. But this one was one that I had gotten secondhand from a fellow collector, and it was when I'm in the very beginning, so I didn't know much of anything. And I was like, okay, I'll pick up a toy that just seemed, you know, to be, you know, a different coloration. And once I picked it up, I was like, okay, am I in love with this? I'm in love with. I like it. I've just, you know, I, if it was in a different color, I would prefer. But I kept it strictly for the fact of it was my first, one of my first indies that I picked up that was a different color, so I kept it.
Okay. You mentioned that you picked up something on the secondary market. I'm always curious about how that works. 'Cause once something leaves my hands, you know, I never see it, never have any ever contact with it ever again. But I know that there's a secondary market, and how does that work?
So there's different locations, different sites, and I guess different social media accounts. You can use a lot of them, go through either Twitter or Discord or Reddit. There's been a few websites that support that, and it's sort of when I first got into it, into the community a couple of years ago, it seemed like the secondhand market wasn't as large. As things grow, as communities grow, there's gonna be more people involved. As more people get involved, pick up more toys, there's gonna be more toys in the market, and people then going through their phases are gonna want to sell more. So, in the last 6 months to a year, I've seen more toys being sold than I have in the last three. And as such, the market has grown exponentially. And you know, Twitter is a great way. I think a lot of makers are on there, more so than like Instagram or other social media apps, and Reddit's another big one, and Discord definitely has a large community of different servers that support that, and they within there have their own channels for selling and buying toys and you know looking to swap and trade, and I think those are the three big ones that at least for collectors they're going on to try to find you know what they're interested in and what they're looking for. And sometimes, you know, you just get a lot of information. As much information as makers have for their own stuff and for other shops, collectors have a very large range of knowledge, and they are just spraying it like wildfire left and right. There's some people, as much of a proponent as I am from blue, there are those who I could show a single color of blue on a toy zoomed in. They can tell me the color and when it was pretty much when it came out and what company it was from, and I'm like blown away by the expertise on that, and they're like, oh, you know, they were doing customs until you know this exact date, and I'm like, my God, how do you know that? Like I thought I knew a lot about certain things, but you know this is just absolutely like nuts, but in like a good way, because as a collector you want to be up to date on certain things like that, and you want to know if certain things are available or if they're not, and the secondhand market is just filled with people with so much knowledge that they're like, okay, well, you know, this came out here, this came out, this company worked with this company on a collaboration, it only happened three times, and you know, we sort of make our own prices within reason based off that knowledge, and it's just absolutely nuts in the best sense.
Yeah, I mean, I've got questions because I'm like, number one, you know, how do you determine pricing? Number two, what about concerns as far as damage or wear and tear on them?
Yeah, those are definitely big concerns. So, for damage, for instance, that definitely plays a large role in the pricing of it. Typically, unless it's, I guess, a rare type of pour that is done on a consistent basis, so like the bigger companies that are, regardless if they're indie or not, if they do a certain type of pour style, whether it's, you know, during, you know, St. Patrick's Day, or if it's during Valentine's Day, or if it's, you know, a rainbow pour, or they're supporting, you know, breast cancer and it's, you know, all pink and that type of stuff. If it's a limited run, that definitely, increases the price typically, sometimes well above the actual market value of when you were first purchasing it. Especially if you're doing like an auction based type of situation. I've seen toys that were originally purchased for, you know, $100, $120 go upwards of $400. And that just sometimes that's just the way the market is. Whether people support that or not, that's everyone's personal decision. There are definitely people on both sides of the coin on that are, you know, hey, it's my money, it's my, you know, my item, I can do what I want with it. And there are others like that's, you know, that's, you know, gouging. That's, you know, you shouldn't be doing that type of thing. You know, at the end of the day, it's silicone. It's like, yeah, but, you know, the same thing could be said for board games. The same thing could be said for, you know, shot glasses. You know, it's as anything's worth whatever someone's willing to pay.
Right.
Effectively, in many cases.
You know, on the maker side, I have my perspective, and there are some folks who see it as an arbitrage market where they can they can buy it and then flip it for X number of dollars over whatever they paid for it, not even because they wanted it, just because they saw it and thought, I can flip this. And I from the maker side, I don't know how to account for something like that.
Yeah, I've seen it quite a lot, unfortunately. I'm not a fan of that, to be quite honest with you, as a collector. You know, in anything in life, you have to have some sort of, I guess, etiquette in certain lines you're not willing to cross. So I've definitely seen, you know, people get toys for other people or even for just themselves where the main purpose was strictly to just flip it. Mm-hmm. Or go on eBay and sell something for, you know, five times the price of what it was. And, you know, there are then collectors who are going, hey, I really wanted that. You know, that's kind of unfair for that to have happened. You know, I would at least would have gotten enjoyment from owning that or, you know, gifting that to someone. But, you know, that'd be their own prerogative. But, you know, just to simply take that away in a sense that you're purchasing something just to flip it, just to make a buck, in many cases, I mean, that's not your livelihood. That's the maker's livelihood in many cases. That's how they're, you know, feeding their cats and dogs, putting food on the plate. You know, they're making a product. They're making the luxury good because it is a luxury good at the end of the day.
Right.
And they're selling it. And that's how they're supporting themselves and their families. And
right.
You as a, you know, you flipping it as much as, you know, at the end of the day, you want to say, oh, this is my livelihood. It's like, yeah, but does it have to be? Because I guarantee you, in many cases, it doesn't have to be. You're choosing to do that, whereas someone who's in a different position, they have to do that in many cases. So I'm not a proponent of, you know, buying a toy strictly just to flip it. I personally have never sold any of my toys, even though I can tell you, honestly, I really should certain ones. I mean, as much as I have a lot, and I love having this many, there's just, you know, there's certain lines I'm like, all right, I have one too many of certain things and I don't necessarily need this. And if I gain as much enjoyment out of, you know, toy X, Y, and Z as I could versus me selling it to someone, even if it's, you know, half the price that I paid for it, but I know that they will have the enjoyment from it, whether or not they're just looking at it, it's on their shelf, or they happen to have and said, this is something I've been looking for, you know, 3 years and the shop is no longer, you know, here. And it just comes down to certain things like that.
Right. So, you know, how do you acquire new pieces? How do you make that decision of what's going to be next into your collection?
For me, I sort of have a mental checklist of an actual one, but a mental checklist right off the bat of like, for instance, like Sela, which is what you're showing. That's a teeny all the way up to Noble. And so that's by far like one of my favorite models. And for me, I have more Sela than any other model. I think I have well over 15 total, or even nearing 20. I think I lost count, to be quite honest with you. For certain things like that, of what you're missing, that's a big one. Of sometimes people are, you know, like we touched on, being a completionist. You know, you want to have all the different sizes of a particular model, or you want to have all the different models from a different from a particular company. What do you know? Are there certain types of models, aesthetic or aspects of a model, like if it's a maw or if it's an equine or if it has a knot or a swell or, you know, a lot of texture, or if it's a hand or claw type situation model? You know, you want to scour the different companies and look for different ones because that's something that you know you like. So it comes down to sort of like a little checkbox. You sort of have to find out what you like, and you're looking for different examples of it. And then when a company comes out with a new model, you're like, oh, OK, okay, that definitely fits into the parameters of what I would want. Let's see if it's, within more parameters, typically the size and the firmness. And you're like, okay, everything's checked off. Now I'm just waiting for the drop. And that's, that's when the panic sets in, because you're trying to, the drops can get absolutely insane. And, there are tons of chatter that happens right before, and then like 2 minutes before a drop happens, it goes absolutely silent because no one wants to bother anyone else when they're about to, hit F5 and refresh the page and like, oh my god, I didn't get it. And then other people, those like five other people, like, I got the one I wanted. And like, all right, lucky you, maybe next time it'll be me. And so yeah, it there's definitely a camaraderie behind it.
I want to take a moment and remind everybody that if you do have any questions, drop them in the chat and we will get them into the queue. And the second thing I will mention is that any products or any companies that we mention on this show are just from our experience and from basically we're not sponsored. Or if you want to say it another way, we're sponsored by ourselves. But yeah, there's not any money changing hands in the background for us to say something nice about any particular company. Now, the next question that I wanted to get into with you was about how do you find the new makers? You've got you've got this itch to get something new to add to your collection. How do you find that new maker?
That's an interesting one. For myself, it's sort of twofold. A lot of times makers have contacted me. They've seen my collection. They've seen some of my posts. I definitely, as funny as it is, my love for blue has definitely become sort of a widespread, I guess, gag of sorts, where there's, anything, if a maker ever puts out a really blue toy, I'm typically one of the few people that is, tagged and like, oh, did Dongsom, see this? Someone tag him quick. Let him make sure that he sees this. Maybe he'll pick it up. So, a lot of times it's actually my mutual friends on Twitter and other social medias or in the Discord servers who will message me and like, you gotta check that this new company out. They just put out this model. Looks great. I know that you like, these types of toys, and obviously, and here's one that they did in blue. And they'll contact me, or the maker will contact me and send me a private message saying, hey, we just opened up, we're a new shop, we see your collection, we see reviews that you've done and other things, and we just want to reach out to you and see if you want to swing by the shop and see what we have, especially we just did this, and they'll tag a picture that's of a model of theirs they just did that's blue. That's one facet. The other way is I'll sort of, every now and then I'll scour and I'll go and, if other shops are talking about certain ones, or if I'm just seeing a lot of likes behind a particular company, or if I'm doing just actual searches, every now and then I'll find one and I'll, keep an eye on it. I won't necessarily follow right off the bat because there's way too many companies that I'm following. But I'll sort of, come back to them every so often. And you look at them one day and you're like, all right, cool, you put out three models, and then with like 6 months you're like, oh, we have eight models, and we've really grown, and next year we're planning on moving to larger locations. Like, all right, cool, I definitely support you guys, let's all right, let's get behind this and let's do that. And so it definitely is twofold.
Now, when it comes to new designs, and as in the makers of those designs, are there any that you're always excited to see?
For myself, I know that I'm a big proponent and a fan of swells. And for those who don't know, that's basically like a more gentle snot, of sorts. Whether it's, higher up or lower down on the model, that's something I prefer. Longer shafted, I guess, equine or maw type style, is also another fan, something I like. So, again, some models I like more than others, so those are the ones I'm going to typically gravitate towards. But if a certain company tends to put out the, I guess, similar type of models that I'm not a biggest fan, that doesn't mean I'm not going to support the company. It's just that I'm not going to necessarily buy every single type from you right off the bat until I realize, all right, maybe I like just a pour that they do, which I've definitely done. There's been some companies where none of the model, only a couple models really spoke to me, but the way they've poured, and even the social media account of how they've shown, behind the scenes and, talked science, of how they make it and what they do. And it's as much of a science as an art, in many regards. I've gone, okay, I might not be the biggest fan of like that type of model or two, but I definitely love everything else you're doing. So you support what you love. And so I try to support as many shops as I can, while still being true to my collection and to myself. Because, there's only so much you can support every shop, because for every shop that might close, there's like 10 more that pop up, and you're like, okay, it gets to a point where, like, I love the community, but I can't support everyone, in that fashion. So I'll support you as best, I'll support you as best I can, whether it's with, retweets or likes, or, buying a squish from you, or, whatever I can. But I can't buy all 15 different models from you in every different size. Like, I can't do that all the time.
By the way, we've got I think it's Venus in the chat. We've also got Chillo Fantasy, Ishtar has jumped into the chat as well as James Parler. So yeah, we've got folks that are throwing stuff into the chat, which is always nice to see. I had a follow-up to that. What is your holy grail pleat? Sorry, what is your holy grail piece that has escaped you so far?
Ooh. Huh. There's been a couple. The one that pops in my mind the most is actually on Strange Bedfellows' main site, or was. I don't know if it's still there. But it was a Scylla. It did have blue in it. It sort of looked like a landscape. It had mixes of greens and blues and yellows, and it looked like a sort of topographical look of a landscape. And something like that just really draws me in. And I have a few, even though my overall collection is blue, with like 99% of them being having that coloration in it, I have like sub themes. So I have ones that are, very spacey or galaxy, darker swirls, that type of thing. Others that are sort of like deep sea. And then I have some that are like landscape. And that was definitely one of the ones I wanted to have in that sort of sub collection. And that escaped me. And I know for a fact that I begged on Twitter at least a couple of times. I'm like, does anyone know where this has gone? Does anyone know who has it, who've seen it? I will pay like top dollar for it. I don't care if it's like nicked and, it's cut up on the bottom. It is not going to be, it is strictly for aesthetic pleasing, just for me to look at and for me to have. Like, I didn't care. And a lot of people were like, I'm so sorry, I haven't seen it, and it has just escaped me. And I was like, okay. And I was bogged down for a while. And then I was like, you know what, at the end of the day, so I was like, you know what, at the end of the day, someone else is enjoying it, and that's all that matters. It doesn't have to be me, because I'm sure I got plenty of pieces that other people are like, I wish I had it, you have it, so I'm happy for you. And that's how it is. Like, it's a two-sided coin. You're sad because you don't have it, but you don't want to be sad about it not having it yourself, and that just be the only emotion you have behind it. Because at the end of the day, you want to be happy that someone else, is getting enjoyment from it. And it's then threefold, because then the maker is having enjoyment from saying, all right, someone likes my art. And for me, as an art with an artist's background, I go, okay, I definitely could support that. I definitely appreciate that occurring. So, you go through the phases of emotion, and you're like, all right, I'm accepting it. It is what it is. You go through sort of like denial, anger, regret. You go through the five stages of grief, and you come to the last one. You're like, all right, I'm accepting it. It just what it is. The grail has, I'm gonna miss out on it, but there'll be another grail, and I'll pick up on that one.
Hong in the chat has asked, have you ever finished painstakingly arranging and taking a group photo only to realize you forgot that you wanted forgot one that you wanted to be in the photo?
Constantly. So the photo that you're looking at now, for instance, the menorah, that's the first Donkscape I did. That took me well over 2 hours to set up, and a lot of people think, oh, that I don't know why it would take you so long. Well, first, I have all of my stuff hidden away, like in boxes and bags, and behind board games. Like, it's like a vault, just trying to find where certain things are, but I know where everything is. So that's some takes some time, but actual setting them up, figuring out where they want to go. And I went through about six or seven different variations of this one photo alone until I realized, all right, I want to put this one here, I want to put that one there. And I still look at it, and I'm like, all right, it's as good as I think I was going to make it at that point without going, you know, crazy over it and trying to be a perfectionist about it, which I can definitely get at times. And I was trying to sort of figure out what made the most aesthetically pleasing visualization of what I wanted from my head. And for me, you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's like putting up, you know, doing a painting. You put the final touches on it, you sell it, and you're like, you know, if I had gotten one more brush stroke in right over there, it'd be perfect. And then, you know, 6 hours later, you're like, now I think it's perfect. And then as soon as it's done, you're like, nope, it's still not done. And, you know, you just got to put the brush down and walk away at some point. So the same thing applies to my dongscapes that you're seeing. There's just at some point where I go, all right, how much time have I spent on this, you know, one little aspect, trying to find the right toy. And every now and then I'm still looking at that. I'm like, did I get the lighting right? And there's definitely photos where I'm like, I don't like how I did it, but you know, I got to put it out there. I made a promise to the people that I'm friends with and, you know, certain aspects. And there's just different things about it that you're trying to always scrutinize, and you are your own worst critic, when it comes to this type of stuff.
Yeah. So, well, that actually answers my next question, because I was going to ask if you had any special displays that you had set up in your house, but it sounds like they're all hidden.
Yeah, they are. Every single toy that I have is hidden. I only have a few that are actually on display, and those are ones that you can't even really tell are toys. So they look like a claw, where they're squishes. A lot of them are squishes that I have out, but certain ones that you definitely can't tell that they're even remotely anything that could be construed as an actual adult toy, are just put away. Mainly for ease, whenever I have family or friends over, it just makes it a lot easier than just trying to throw, you know, a tarp or a bed sheet over and like, what's behind that giant shelving unit over there? It's like, nothing. I don't need to see anything. Keep walking, please. You know, let's go over here. Like, let's step out of the dining room. It's like, no. And then you could, you know, and if you have, you know, kids around, that's always a pain. And just, it, for me, it just made a lot more sense. Just hide 200 toys and just do what you have to, scroll them away, and you're good.
Dub Sativa is in the chat. Good to see you again. Let's see. I wanted to check in with you and make sure that we had covered everything. Was there anything else that you wanted to make sure that we mentioned?
The only thing I can think of is just that I think in many regards, being a collector, in some cases, I mean, I don't think a lot of people want to admit it, but in many cases, a collector sometimes gets a bad rap in some cases. That's just from my own personal view, that because you'll have people, and I've done this with certain toys, you buy a toy and people are expecting you to use it. Especially if you are in the sex worker field, or if you have showcased your toys in use, or you're a maker, that they're expecting, you know, the full spectrum of the capabilities of a toy. So to show it off, to use it, to sell, to make, just every aspect. And a collector, sort of, you know, you're the embodiment in many cases of that giant amalgamation of everything. That, you know, if you're a collector, you know, typically you're also using it, you're also showcasing it, you're also doing reviews for it. And that's not always the case. In many regards it is, but not always. And as such, you'll have sometimes people looking at a collector, and there have been, I guess you could say, disagreements, very heated disagreements amongst collectors, going of whether or not you should own a certain toy, if it's right for you to own it. And that comes down to sort of the, I guess, either political correctness or just the mentality or ideology of certain people behind it of whether you can own. And there's definitely pieces that I own that I questioned whether I should even be allowed to purchase them. And I've asked friends that I hold in very high regard, from Fantasy Grove, Rhaegar. I've asked them. I said, I've spoken with the Fantasy Grove. I said, can I pick your brain on something? And they had said, sure. And I had asked them. I said, can I, you know, personally, as you know, collector, and as someone from this type of, you know, mentality and background and my ideologies and what I identify as, can I own this particular toy? Like, is it right of me? And that was one of their, I think their mini grinders, the little,
the Snitties.
I forget the name of it. Yes, the Snitties, or even the little snake head one, which is blanking on me. And I, because that's not necessarily, that's for in use, you know, but also aesthetic, but it's also for in use, but not necessarily for someone like myself. And I said, do I have permission? And they said, you don't need my permission. You can buy whatever you want. You know, it's still supporting the community, still supporting me. And I still felt bad about it. And it bothered me for quite a while. And I think a lot of that comes down to certain stigmas that of just in general of what people believe in and what they have, and, you know, whether or not they should own certain things, whether or not it's going to be used or just shown. And I think people with larger than normal, so, I mean, what do you define as normal? But I think people with larger collections, and we know who we are pretty much, should we own this many? Because at the end of the day, it's like, you know, having a car. How many? You can only drive one car at a time. You don't need 30. But, yeah, you know, it's, you know, you do what you want with it. And so I think it comes down to, should you have 15 of the same model? Should you own this particular type of model because it's not designed for you? That comes down to certain lines that either yourself put down or other people put down, and it's whether or not you want to be respectful of that, or, you know, respectful of your own self in many regards.
All right. You know, that kind of dovetails and possibly even answers my final question for you, which was, what have you learned the most from being a collector?
That we're a bigger community than we think. There's a lot of knowledge. There's a lot of different people from a lot of different backgrounds. As much as some people looking from the outside in might think, oh, you're just a bunch of, you know, I guess the P word would be perverted in some ways, or you're just a little too out there from the norm. It's like, yeah, but you could say that about any community, about anything. You know, it's a niche, and, you know, whenever there's a niche, it's always considered outside the mainstream of the world. And so as a collector, I've gained a lot of knowledge on just the type of people that collect, and it runs all over the place, from, you know, sex workers to you know, lawyers, doctors, and everyone with different types of backgrounds, to, you know, Rennies and Trekkies and anyone else who does literally anything. Because, you know, it's a space in which, like anything else, you know, you're going to have people from different backgrounds, and then you have some people who are become a pillar within that community because of just how much support they have, how much knowledge they have, what they bring to the table. So I personally, for instance, consider Shop Dad a major pillar in the community, and certain companies like Pleasure Forge, Strange Bellic Fella, and, you know, the others mentioned, as pillars of the community, because they really are, especially within the indie space. And as a collector, you look to these pillars to sort of for guidance and sort of and motivation and support, but you look to them for what direction as we as a community are heading into, because a community is built upon the individual, and it's built upon the individual as a collective of where we're going to go, like a flock of birds. And, you know, no one person decides where you go, but you do have a say, and things evolve, they'll change, they'll move.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, some things happen and you're like, oh, I didn't know we were going to go in this direction, but, you know, it does. And then when things sort of click together, you get something like what happened last year. When there was, I think, if I recall correctly, a whole week where there's like 6 or 7 different shops all had a Maw model come out, and it was like Maw week, and everyone in the community went absolute bananas over it. Like, everyone's like, are you serious? This shop's back? I haven't seen them in over a year, and, you know, this company hasn't made a new model in like 9 months, and it went absolute haywire, and it was the talk of the town for months, and it just was insane, and everyone was just like, I need to have every type of model, I need to have it in every coloration, and so, like, see, this is what happens when one another sort of supports each other, and it was really great to see.
Yeah. Ishtar said in the chat, the brain trust, excuse me, the brain trust of the community is a beautiful thing. Absolutely. And I hope to, you know, bring that brain trust to light and let people actually get a sense of, excuse me, get a sense of, you know, what it's like from different parts of the community, and to be able to, you know, get to know the makers as well as the folks who are on the other side who contribute to that community as well. And so, Grizzly, I wanted to say thank you for joining me and giving me a little insight on the other side of the screen. And if you'll hang out for just a moment, I will get back with you. And with that, say good night.
Thank you very much for having me. And have a good night, everyone. Yeah.
All right, everybody. That was Dong Sommelier, also known as Grizzly, and a collector. And over 200 pieces in his collection. Next week, we have Ishtar 137 coming up, who is also a collector. And we'll get to see that collection. I've seen pictures, and it is impressive. So I'm really looking forward to that one. And with that, I will remind everybody that we do have a Patreon, and you can support us that way. Dub Sativa, thank you. I appreciate you joining us. It's been a really interesting conversation. And with that, I am out, and I'll see you next Sunday. Bye.